Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, thoroughly enjoying this little glimpse of fall that we're enjoying here in the state of Michigan this weekend. It's indeed the most wonderful time of the year in this region of the United States. The Left of Lansing podcast is dedicated to highlighting the progressive fight for progressive values after decades of disastrous Republican rule. That's what this podcast is all about. We progressives believe in forging ahead, on improving life through education and science, and ensuring that people have equal opportunities economically, politically, and socially. While elitist conservatives fight to enrich people like themselves, many who adhere to their divisive regressive language are left behind, sadly. And that's what this monologue is all about here this week on the Left of Lansing podcast. Thanks to the Cook Political Report's Dave Wasserman, he tweeted this week that the percentage of white men representing House Democrats, U.S. House Democrats, has fallen from 60 to 39% in the past decade. Meanwhile, the percentage of white men representing House Republicans has increased from 87 to 90%. But here's the thing. As the Washington Post reported just 5 years ago, white men represent just 31% of the entire U.S. population, and that number continues to drop. Yet, and even more sad commentary, is that white males have as much as 8 times the political power of people of color and women. Now, as a white American male, I seem to recall so many conservatives, white conservatives, complaining how Democrats received a strong majority of the African-American vote, especially during the Obama years. And then actually 90% of black women voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016. Perhaps maybe Democrats should remember that number here this time around, maybe. But while African-Americans back Democrats overwhelmingly, white males are becoming more and more Republican. It always amazed me. I would hear white conservatives say, why are so many black Americans voting for Democrats? It's almost monolithic. Well, you could say the same for white male voters who tend to go Republican. Now, it's not breaking news that white males comprised of the vast majority of the Republican Party. I'm not broaching any new real information here, I don't think. My question, though, is why? Why are white men backing a party that doesn't represent the majority of them? I'm reminded of the old Tea Party days during the Obama era. I mean, they seemed like they really cared about constitutional values and prudent government spending. Okay, no, I never believed them at all, not one bit. And I didn't believe them because we were just a year removed from the George W. Bush days when debt and deficits rose, when we didn't put the Iraq war on the budget books, when we passed massive bailouts to Wall Street thanks to years and years and years of conservative dogma that we must deregulate all industry, especially the financial services industry. Suddenly, once Obama got into office, these white people decided to put on tricorder hats. And then they started to shout that they cared about budgets. Of course, once a black man became president. And wasn't it just a coincidence, by the way, that the Tea Party symbolized a time when rich white men dominated politics, when we just happened to elect the country's first black president? I'm sure it was just a coincidence. Because as we're learning how we are now running trillion-dollar yearly deficits, I'm shocked, just so shocked, that I'm not seeing any Tea Party rallies anymore. Why is that? Speaking of the Tea Party, David Koch died this week. I'm not one to speak ill of the dead, but he, along with his brother Charles, bankrolled for years. They bankrolled politicians to pass policies that affected the lives of millions of people, policies that harmed millions of people. Amongst many things, the Koch brothers financially backed the Tea Party movement, a movement designed to protect Wall Street and corporate interests, their interests, while hurting the rest of us. As the great Charlie Pierce wrote in Esquire this week, of course, the most lasting damage done by the Kochs is in the area of the climate crisis, in which their money and influence may have paralyzed the response to it. Until now, things have gone past the point of control. The New York Times wrote about the Koch brothers, actually tweeted, saying, Koch-funded initiatives to undercut climate science and counter efforts to fight climate change in dark money, Jane Mayer wrote, the Kochs vehemently opposed the government taking any action on climate change that would hurt their fossil fuel profits. What's even worse is that the Kochs got a significant portion of this country to believe that giving polluters more power to pollute would benefit them in the long term. The Amazon rainforest is burning. It accounts for about 20% of the world's oxygen. Brazil voted to put its own version of Trump to lead the country. And now the Amazon rainforest is burning. Jair Bolsonaro ran on an anti-government, anti-immigrant platform and sadly won. Bolsonaro is doing in Brazil what the Kochs have always wanted here in the United States. And now, like I said, the rainforest is burning. Talk about a fitting metaphor on the very week David Koch died. And lest we forget, the Kochs also backed Scott Brown to run Wisconsin into the ground. And they did it, if I may remind you, they did it by dividing Wisconsinites regarding teachers' unions. You remember that. They painted teachers as the real enemies. The right-wing propaganda arm pushed this narrative. Half of Wisconsin believed that punishing teachers would improve their lives. How? All in the name. And it was done all in the name to lower taxes for Koch-related industries and their ilk. That's what it was all about. And that helped kickstart right-wing laws right here in Michigan. We also hurt unions with right-to-work-for-less laws, just to name one of them. Meanwhile, Michiganders' lives aren't improving thanks to these right-wing laws. I mean, despite being told that we're living in such a great economy, according to the latest Atlas report from the United Way, 43% of Michiganders cannot afford basic needs such as housing, healthcare, childcare, food, transportation, etc. I mean, these are basic needs, and 43% of Michiganders cannot afford them. That's a problem. You know, I've already highlighted this point a few months ago, but it shows how living under the so-called right-wing libertarian utopia that the Koch brothers and their buddies here in Michigan, like the DeVos family, have tried, actually hurt. They didn't help our state. Now, some of you might be saying, but Pat, now hold on. The Kochs didn't like the occupant in the White House. Perhaps. Or perhaps it was just all a front to make us think that way. Think about it. The occupant espouses many of the Koch brothers' viewpoints when it comes to tax cuts for the ultra-wealthy and the connected. He espouses massive deregulation and the constant attacks on hard-working Americans throughout the country. I mean, actually, if I may digress here for a quick moment, I should stop saying deregulation when talking about how billionaires and corporations buy politicians to pass laws enhancing their bottom lines. My wife and the podcast technical advisor, Dr. Heather, prefers to call it re-regulation. And I've always kind of liked that term rather than deregulation, because the politicians these people bribe simply are there to craft laws that will help them financially while hurting other small business owners and workers and our healthcare and our environment. So they are re-regulating things. They're just moving some words around so that way the ultra-rich will benefit while everybody else suffers. That's re-regulation, not really deregulation. I just thought I'd bring that up, and it's a theory that I agree with. So thank you, Dr. Heather. You sold me on that one. Now, getting back to my point here, do you think that the Koch brothers hated how the occupant and his Republican lapdogs in Congress passed the $1 trillion tax cut for themselves? Do you really? Regular folk across America and those here in Michigan haven't felt some awesome boon thanks to the newest edition of the GOP tax scam of 2017. And now, the occupant, fearing that a recession might be on the horizon, is proposing cutting capital gains taxes again, which doesn't help the American people. Oh, it helps rich investors, but it doesn't help us. It doesn't trickle down to us. It never has. As Cody Fenwick reported in Alternet and in Salon this week, we learned that we overinflated the first half of this year's employment numbers, big time. CODA reports, new data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics revealed that the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act appears to have done even less on the jobs side of the equation than we previously thought. This week, the Bureau announced that it has revised its estimates for the state of the U.S. employment in 2018 downward by about 500,000 jobs, a half a million jobs. Cody says that doesn't mean people had jobs and lost them. It just reflects the fact that the statistical analysis usually involves a margin of error. And in this case, the Bureau overestimated the number of jobs added to the economy in the past year. Okay, so does this mean the numbers were inflated or that something nefarious happened? I don't know. There is no evidence to suggest something like that transpired. But didn't the right wing claim the numbers were cooked when the unemployment rate dropped during the Obama years? I seem to remember that. But then, all of a sudden, when the occupants term began, we were supposed to believe the good numbers. As progressive talk show host and comedian John Fugelsang says about the occupant and the continued unemployment drop from the Obama years, it was just another example of a rich white guy taking credit for the hard work a black man did before him. Oh, and remember when the occupant and his Republican lapdogs celebrated that the GOP tax scam would lead to massive growth? Well, Cody cites a Wall Street Journal story which said, the occupant has touted the prior estimates of economic and job growth in 2018 as a sign that his economic policies, including the 2017 tax cut, were giving the economy a boost after years of lackluster growth. The revised figures show his goal of 3% growth was not achieved in 2018 and that the tax cut overhaul may have had a smaller short-term impact than his administration previously thought. Cody also reminds us that the GOP tax scam added $1.5 trillion to the debt over the next decade. $1.5 trillion. Now, I'm not one who believes in the debt and deficit monster. The debt and deficit monster isn't real and is perhaps an arbitrary number created out of the thin blue air so that the ultra-rich out there can say that we must cut spending and, just coincidentally enough, we must also cut more taxes to help them. So I'm not a big believer in the debt and deficit monster. All throughout the Obama years, the right wing claimed inflation would ruin us due to our rising debt. Debt that rose thanks to 40 years of right wing Reaganomics. But this inflation fear never surfaced. In fact, I seem to recall it was Dick Cheney who gave the whole game away when he told George W. Bush that deficits don't matter. That being said, it's amazing that with the tax cuts adding $1.5 trillion, that the Koch brothers, the DeVos family, and others in their ilk aren't bankrolling Tea Party rallies anymore across the country to rail against these tax cuts. I mean, why aren't they telling their bought-off politicians that they must go on TV right now and beg the people to bring their tricorder hats and take to the streets? Oh, right, because it's adding to the debt. Oh, right. That's right, because it's okay adding to the debt just as long as the Koch brothers, the DeVos family, and the occupants family all become a little bit more rich thanks to the GOP tax scam. See, that's the game, everyone. And by the way, when will someone investigate if the occupant is purposely saying or tweeting stuff to sway the stock market in one way or another and attempt to help his investments? Would, say, lowering interest rates work in the occupant and his family's favor? Maybe. Perhaps somebody should look into that. You see, white males keep flocking to the Republican Party, even though the Republican Party doesn't care about them, as I have been presenting here for the past few minutes. Oh, sure, the Republican Party cares about rich donors, many of them who happen to be white, but their policies are not helping white men. But that's the environment the Koch brothers, with the help of the occupant, have created. They don't want their main constituency blaming them for their constant struggle to get ahead in our society. So what they do is tell them that poor people are to blame, or undocumented workers are to blame, or Michigan Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib is to blame because she's a Muslim woman, or kneeling NFL players are to blame, and on and on and on. They blame the other, so their base won't blame them and their wretched policies. So, are we shocked when we hear stories where the FBI recently arrested a Trump supporter who threatened a Miami restaurant worker and then called for the extermination of all Latinos? No, we shouldn't be shocked by that. This is the kind of division the Koch brothers created for years. The only thing they didn't like about the occupant is that he tossed aside dog whistles and plainly said what they tacitly pushed for years, that poor people, especially poor people of color, are the real enemies of America. And that's too bad, because many of these white voters are in the same boat. They are in the same boat as those they are told to hate on a daily basis. We are all in the same boat. They want us to fight amongst ourselves while they run politicians to pass laws to help them. So meanwhile, in Michigan, the Koch and DeVos-inspired Michigan Chamber of Commerce demands that average Michiganders pick up the tab to pay for road repairs, but don't you dare ask the business community or rich people to pay a little bit more in taxes. No, no, no. As I recently pointed out in a previous podcast, Michigan Advance noted a poll from a national progressive policy group called the State Innovation Exchange determined that 76% of Michigan residents, 76% of Michigan residents support the creation of a graduated income tax where millionaires pay more and working people get a tax cut. This poll also pointed out how 58% of Michiganders backed repealing the regressive Republican Rick Snyder corporate tax breaks from last decade. A constitutional amendment is needed, however, to get a graduated tax passed in Michigan, but you know what? I think it might pass. Michigan Advance also notes that Democratic legislators have introduced a fair tax bill that would get the system in place. House bills were introduced by State Representatives Robert Wittenberg of Huntington Woods, Jim Ellison of Royal Oak, and Rebecca Warren of Ann Arbor. And also State Senator Jeff Irwin has introduced a Senate joint resolution. That is happening right now in our state legislature. But guess what? The Republicans, the gerrymandered Republicans, are making sure those bills never see the light of day. You see, this idea frightens the Michigan Chamber of Commerce because the people would learn they would receive a tax cut while taxing the rich. But in order to get the politicians they bribe to work for them, they promise to back politicians who, coincidentally, are also endorsed by Right to Life of Michigan. Thanks to Michigan Advance's Susan Demas for bringing up that point in her latest piece. Ms. Demas also reminds us that our right-wing Chamber of Commerce also refused to back LGBTQ rights and even fought against immigrant rights when Lansing considered being a sanctuary city. And let's not forget how the Chamber also pushed for Michiganders on Medicaid to undergo drug testing because, you know, only poor people, people of color, are on Medicaid and taking drugs. This kind of right-wing influence has damaged the state of Michigan and has damaged the entire country, and has damaged the world. But it's this kind of influence the Koch brothers, the DeVos family, and the Michigan Chamber of Commerce has coveted for years. And we're paying the price. Farmers are paying the price. Workers are paying the price. Our water is paying the price. Our roads are paying the price, which means we're paying the price to repair our vehicles. Our environment is paying the price. As Butch Cassidy says, that's a fine price to pay for beauty.
A podcast devoted to helping fix the damn roads because Pat's tired of dodging potholes. It's the Left of Lansing podcast. Upset with Pat? Want to give him a piece of your mind? Or do you actually want to praise Pat for everything that he does? Just email him leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now back to Pat Johnston.
Remember, you can always email me. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right. Well, the gerrymandered Republican majority in the state legislature is finally talking with Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer on passing a budget that will fix roads, education, and our environment. But Governor Whitmer said that after talking with State Senator Majority Mike Shirkey and House Speaker Lee, I didn't know I was taking a loaded gun onto a plane Chatfield, that she would not agree to any cuts to the education budget. Whitmer spokesperson Tiffany Brown said in a statement that Republicans finally offered a plan, but it is unfortunately built upon the core element that the governor has long said she would not support. No one should be surprised that gutting our kids' education to fix some roads is off the table. Their core element cuts education spending by $400 per pupil statewide, which neither fixes the damn roads nor serves our kids. Now, Shirky has disagreed with that assertion, but since the governor is the only one with a plan to fix the roads and education, I'm going with her assessment for now. That's not to say that I'm completely on board, though, with a 45-cent gas tax hike, which Whitmer has proposed. While it's a user tax, I feel that it would hurt the middle class and the poor much more harsh than, let's say, corporations or the top 1%. But that's really not the point. I mean, the governor is correct in pointing out that we've got a revenue problem in this state. And somehow, some way, we've got to start reinvesting in Michigan, or else it'll continue to fall apart. We've tried, everybody, we have tried the Republican way for decades. And look where we are. Also, why is this going down to the wire? Republicans boasted for years how awesome they were when they completed budgets during the Republican Rick Snyder years. I mean, they completed the budgets in June back in those days. But once a Democrat got into office, working on a budget agreement during the summer didn't seem as cool to them. It's almost like the Republican leadership is purposely wasting its time, or our time, so that they can reach a last-minute deal with the governor. And then the state legislature will have maybe a day or two to read the entire budget before voting on it. Sort of like how the supremely flawed auto insurance quote-unquote reform bill was passed last spring. I hope not, but I think that's exactly what they're hoping to do once again. But rather than looking if Governor Whitmer gets her 45-cent gas tax, or even if it's 20-cent gas tax, perhaps we progressives should be focusing on a larger picture. Hear me out. Laura Gibbons from MLive wrote about the different ideas being floated around Lansing on how to fix the road. She notes that, of course, one of them is Whitmer's gas tax proposal, and how maybe in the end, Republicans will agree to a lower gas tax. Maybe not 45 cents, but, you know, who knows? Maybe around 20 or 25 cents. Gibbons says that Republicans might propose transitioning the state sales tax to be used strictly on infrastructure, or they might propose accelerating money from their 2015 road funding plan, a funding plan that doesn't really do much to fix the roads. Or they might open up ways for local municipalities to raise gas taxes to fund their roads. Or they might simply shuffle the money around, which is what I think they'll do in the end, because that's what Republicans do. But Gibbons does note there is another Republican idea that's been floated out there that goes after teachers' pensions. She writes that the concept involves using bonds to fund teacher pension obligations up front, then paying back the bonds on a set schedule, and that it was considered by some as a possibility for freeing up some additional money that could be used for roads. However, as Chad Livengood from Crane's Business Detroit reported a few months ago, they tried something similar like that in Chicago. Except, Livengood notes, Chicago backed away from issuing $10 billion in bonds to solve its pension crisis, in part because the interest rates for the debt-ridden Windy City were going to risk reverse arbitrage. That is where the pension fund returned less on its investment than the interest payments on the pension bonds. Again, I'll say that again, where the pension fund returned less on its investment than the interest payments on the pension bonds. So, in the end, everybody, teachers could lose more money in the future if we follow that Republican plan or Republican idea here in Michigan. Oh, wouldn't that be fantastic? But again, what would Republicans be if they weren't trying to attack those ultra-rich, living high-in-the-hog teachers? Back to Laura Gibbons' MLive article. She notes, the Democrats, though, have introduced an idea, listen to this, to fix the roads. House Democrats introduced legislation earlier this year that would implement a 2.5% corporate income tax hike, a flow-through parity tax of 4.25%, and a new vehicle miles travel tax of 6 cents per mile on trucks weighing 26,000 pounds or more. The legislation, she writes, would also create a truck-only toll on Michigan bridges, similar to the Roadworks tolling program in Rhode Island. New revenue generated from the corporate tax increase and the vehicle miles travel tax would go towards a new Fixing Michigan Roads Fund under the bill package. Naturally, Republicans panned this idea. It's a pretty sound idea, but they panned it because they'll do whatever it takes to protect their donors at the expense of our state. But that's what this entire fight is all about. We've tried running the state on the cheap for years under the radical right-wing Republican libertarian utopia dream, But that dream has failed over and over and over again. Let's remember, Michigan ranks last among the 50 states in funding growth for public education. A Michigan State University study recently showed that Proposal A has been a dismal failure. The study showed that Michigan school funding dropped by 30% since 2002 when adjusted for inflation. And as MLive's Julie Mack wrote, factoring in inflation, Michigan's spending on K-12 education in 2015 was 82% of 1995 spending, worse than any other state, according to that study. Wow. So that's what this fight is all about, everybody. It's time that we begin not asking, that we begin demanding that big business and the rich start joining in the fight to save our state. The Democratic plan is forward-thinking, it's logical, and it's designed to improve conditions throughout Michigan. While Governor Whitmer's gas tax proposal might not be the best plan, I don't know, at least she's trying to make everyone understand that we can no longer cut our way to prosperity. Kansas tried and failed in that endeavor. It's time that we reinvest in Michigan. And it's time that we take some bold, progressive steps to save Michigan. Make sure to call your local legislators and tell them just that.
It's Progressivism with Passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat Johnston shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com. The Left of Lansing podcast is available on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Google, and of course on leftoflansing.com. Word has it, that's Rick Snyder's favorite site. Now, back to Pat Johnston.
Hey, remember, if you'd like some more of my ideas and thoughts on what's happening in Michigan politics and also national politics, please visit the website leftoflansing.com. That's leftoflansing.com. All right, time for the Left of Lansing last call. Michigan Republicans, if you didn't see, are suing to stop the new Citizen Redistricting Commission that voters overwhelmingly passed in 2018. I mean, the proposal won in a landslide, 61 to 39%. I mean, it wasn't even close. And it won despite the right-wing Michigan Chamber of Commerce's attempts to block it from the 2018 ballot. Now, I just wonder why the chamber wasn't all for giving the people the right to draw its own legislative lines. Could it be, and I'm just spitballing here, but could it be that the chamber wanted its current crooked gerrymandering system in place, giving legislative Republicans the power to draw districts designed to benefit them? Yeah, I know. I think that's probably it. Yeah, that's probably why. Well, the Detroit News reported this week that the legal action is backed by the Fair Lines America Foundation, a nonprofit with ties to the National Republican Redistricting Trust. The suit was filed on behalf of 15 Michigan residents who would be excluded from serving on the commission under the new rules. Any reform, no matter how poorly conceived, must achieve its goals without infringing on the basic rights guaranteed to all of us by the Constitution, said Scott Walker, the former Wisconsin governor who is now finance chair for the GOP redistricting group. In a statement, he says that Michigan's new redistricting commission falls short of that standard by punishing the people of Michigan for exercising those rights or for being related to someone who has. Oh, how cool is that, everybody? Scott Walker, the Koch brothers' water boy, Scott Walker, is fighting against allowing you, me, Michiganders as a whole, to have their own voices heard. But is the right wing serious about this fight? I mean, there are certain people who should never be part of this commission. Again, as the Detroit News reports, this amendment to the Michigan Constitution prohibits service on the commission by anyone who, in the last 6 years, was a partisan candidate, elected official, political appointee, lobbyist, campaign consultant, and officer or member of the governing body of a political party. And it also excludes a parent, child, or spouse of any of those individuals. Yep, seems like that makes perfect sense to me. Now, the Supreme Court has already ruled that states must be in control of their own district lines. So we've got that going for us. But this is how the right wing rolls, everybody. They want to take power away from you and me and put it in their donors' hands. That's how the game works for them. I will say this, I feel even better knowing that Democratic Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel is going to defend this new law for us. And it's great having an AG who fights on behalf of the people, isn't it?
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you are hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to my favorite progressive voice, Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing podcast. Remember, you can always find me on Twitter. That's at Left of Lansing. I'm also on the Facebook as well. Don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for additional info and ideas and thoughts and arguments that I like to present there on that website. Again, that's leftoflansing.com. You can also email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. All right, everybody. It is Labor Day weekend coming up. That means we're getting down to the nitty-gritty when it comes to the budget and when it comes to the fight to reinvest in Michigan. Please stay engaged. Please stay informed. Please contact your state legislator. Please contact your state senator. And please contact the governor's office, too, and make sure that they know exactly what you want and that you want us to finally, once again, spend on Michigan rather than cutting back on Michigan. We've tried the Republican, libertarian, utopian way for too long. I don't want to look like Mississippi. I don't want to look like Kansas. I want us to look like Michigan once again, because Michigan can be a true leader in this nation. As long as we keep pressing for true progressive change in Michigan, then we can become a leader in the nation. This is where it can all begin. So let me just say, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.